podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, welcome back. I hope the fortnightly break's not too long for you, but I'm back with another corker of an episode. Today we're joined by someone who's captaining England 20s, but more recently has been hit by what is really decimating the English game. He was at London Irish when they went bust, and now finds himself playing fly half at Gloucester, but currently recovering from a long-term injury. It is, of course, the one and only Monty Bradbury. All that's left to say is enjoy. We'll see you in half an hour.
Thanks for joining today, Mons. Lovely to see you. So, you're talking about you've had a pretty wild 12 months, starting with playing for England 20s, captaining the side, starting at fly half, and then at the end of the season, obviously, you were hit with the pretty savage news of London Irish going into administration. I want to start there, because obviously that's a big thing in the rugby world with three clubs in the last year and a half going bust. Can you talk to me a little bit about the process as a player? Like, how did you find out what went on?
Definitely. So I think ours was potentially a little bit more unique than Wasps and Worcester. I think mainly because ours was primarily, at the end of the day, due to our owner pulling out of the club. And basically said from quite early doors that he wanted to try to sell the club and was almost willing to give it away for £1. And he was quoted in the press saying that almost at the start of the season. And like we were obviously all aware of that and just obviously hoped and assumed that a buyer would come in. Season plays out, obviously right at the back end of the season, we start to hear about rumours in the press, and there's always rumours in the rugby world and things like that, that, you know, the owner might be pulling out, we might be short on funds, blah, blah, blah. And basically, we first have a, you know, it's probably a month or so before the end of the season, we have a team meeting. We get told that, the owner's looking to sell, but we're getting told that this American consortium was the only way it was phrased to us, was going to step in and come in and buy the club and write off its debt and basically invest loads into the club and look to really grow the club. And they had a vision for it basically being a British and European powerhouse of a club. And I think they'll probably, supposedly, were then going to try to tie that in with that Irish link, potentially back to the US and try to grow the game that way as well. So that's kind of what we were originally told. And obviously we were all thinking, this is class, we're going to have loads of money as a club and, you know, it's all going to be great and we're going to go start winning things. But I think that kind of then dragged on and we were made numerous assurances in terms of these funds are going to be coming tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and these funds haven't come and the owner hasn't sold it. And that kind of went on for a few weeks. They got to a point where we all took, at the end of 1 month, our existing owner said to us, I'm not paying full wages. And we basically struck a deal with him, hoping to then supposedly get this American consortium in the next couple of weeks. We basically were paid half, so we all got paid half wage as well. Again, players keep playing, we keep training and things like that. And a couple of weeks later, we play against Exeter, last game of the season. And we were basically, at this point, really weren't sure about the state of the club. And, you know, it's going mental press about us folding and things like that. Anyway, we play end of the season. We've just mushed out on top four. And then, about a week or two into the off season, I think at this point, a lot of us knew the writing was on the wall a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it dragged out for so long. We'd been made so many different assurances in terms of these funds coming in. And, you know, but the issue was, I think when it really hit home with me, it was about a week or two into the off season. So we were just on Zoom at this point. Lads are all over the world.
Yeah.
Holiday and all over the country at home and things like that. And we have a meeting with kind of the RPA and the RFU. And an RFU spokesperson comes in and says, we still don't even know who this supposed American consortium is. Mm-hmm. And that's when you go, right, okay. So I think, like, if the RFU don't even know who these potential owners are meant to be, there's no chance there, kind of thing. And although I think a lot of us knew it, it was kind of that's when it really hit home. And then, you know, a few days later, we get told we're going into administration and et cetera. And, you know, basically start looking for another job. And obviously, lads tried to sort things out as much as possible. But a lot of guys weren't able to get other jobs in rugby, or so a lot of lads my around my uni. You got a couple down Exeter actually as well. Cardiff Met, Loughborough, blah blah blah. But yeah, that's pretty much how it went down. It was a quite a drawn out process compared to, say, I know Wasp was just like one meeting, we're done, and that's much it. I'm sure you might have spoken to lads who were at Wasp as well in the same podcast, same thing. So yeah, it was a little bit different, but yeah, it was probably a little bit more drawn out than potentially other clubs were.
Do you think there's enough protection? I mean, especially if you spoke about the RFU and the RPA, obviously they're heavily involved with it. Do you think there is enough protection for, especially the young players, as you said, it's hard. Obviously, players like Charlie obviously got his move straight away to Leicester.
Yep.
You've gone off to Gloucester. Then I look at someone else who, I mean, you obviously played with Lucas Brooke, who's now had to be down from down the Exeter route to uni. People have obviously, as you mentioned, go down there with different routes, but was there enough like transparency and connection between the RFU and the RPA with the players?
I'd say it's hard to say that there was, because the way it ended up, and obviously, you know, with three clubs folding, it's where do you point the finger kind of thing. But I don't think the answer is quite as simple as that, because what can the RPA and the RFU do when an owner says he doesn't own the club anymore? And no one steps in to really cover that financially. And I think we, you know, the rugby world knows that English rugby in particular, it's not a money-making business. As an owner, particularly with COVID, like you're just losing numerous millions a year pretty much. And you have to be this, in general, a big benefactor who loves their rugby and is almost willing to have that financial cost to be able to own a rugby club, have that kind of with them. So, yeah, I think it's hard to point the finger really at the RPA and RFU. And I know some people might have different ideas, and I probably don't necessarily know quite enough about the backroom stuff involved. But yeah, when an owner steps away and no one at all fills that void, I think it's quite difficult really for the RFU, because the RFU can't really, unless they're going to actually fund themselves, like in a Irish model or a New Zealand model. But again, there's only then four, five, six provinces, whatever there is. So it is very difficult.
Do you think the writing's on the wall in a sense then for British rugby? That, do you think that there's obviously been rumours this season that another club's been struggling and would been late on payments? Do you think it could continue to spread and happen to another club?
Well, I think obviously the RFU have already, to a certain extent, started that with those central contracts that they've, you know, I don't know, 20, I don't know what the rumours are. They haven't really, I don't know whether they've fully come out and announced them. But yeah, obviously they're going to help fund some English players to hopefully stay in England. And personally, a lot of people might think differently about this. I do think that if you are playing in France, you shouldn't be able to play for England, because I think then everyone would just leave. I think the English league completely fall to the way by the wayside kind of thing. I do think, though, knowing Henry Arundel and things like that, I do think he's been hard done by the RFU, because he was, as you said, he was out of a job, and him going to play for Racing, that I'm sure financially it's a pretty good move for him as well.
It's nice for a 21-year-old.
It's not too bad, is it? It's not too bad. So I don't think, at the same time, like, who would say no to that, even if they then couldn't play for England? You're living in Paris, you know, you're under Stuart Lancaster, playing with some of the best players in the world. Like, what's not there to like, if you know what
do
I mean?
Not think, do you not think in Henry's case, obviously he got given the 12-month leeway when Irish under, it was fine for him to play abroad. He then, I'm sure a number of clubs would have happily brought him back to England, and he chose to stay out there. Do you not think that he's made his decision then? It's not necessarily his, like, he's had his opportunity to come back.
Yeah, I think he probably should have had this season, so he probably should have been able to play in the Six Nations. I know he had a 1+2, and I think he's activated that as well. Mm-hmm. So he's there for kind of 2.5 years. So that might do with it, and him then not coming back. As you said, I'm sure clubs would have taken him at the end of this year back in England. So yeah, obviously he's made that choice, and I guess he would have known where he was at. But I do think he should have been allowed to play in the Six Nations and just given like a year. Like, I think Jack Willis was, I don't want to, 100% sure, but I do think he should have been given this year. But I do think, as a general rule, the RFU do allow players to play over in France, I do think the English system will fall apart a little bit. But as you said, is the writing on the wall? I hope not. But as you said, it's not a financially viable model, I think, at the end of the day, when you are solely relying on owners losing. Yeah, you're, that's literally where it is. And as you said, you hear the whole time of, you know, there might be a late payment here and this club's struggling. And you're never entirely sure exactly how much truth there is behind that. But I do think from, particularly with rugby, from what we've been like at Irish through and etc., there is often kind of no smoke without fire a little bit. I don't think it's quite like football where, you know, newspapers completely make stuff up. I'm sure, I'm sure there isn't.
There is truth and facts behind it.
Some sort of truth, I reckon, behind it. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I'm obviously hoping that no more clubs do fold, because I do think then the system really is failing.
Yeah. And then obviously, given what you just said, were you at all surprised? Obviously, I wasn't planning on this, but the news that Owen Farrell in the last week or so, that he decided to pack up and head off to France as well.
I think a lot of people probably thought he was probably going to be a one club man, spend his career at Saracens and, play for England until he was 35, 36. I'm sure people probably expected that. Again, can I blame him for leaving? No. He's probably earning, I mean, he's probably not on bad money at Saracens either, but he'll be on some fair whack out in Paris. Got a young family. He might want some kids to learn French for a couple of years and grow them up there. And I said, you're living in Paris, step away from the English media a bit, which vilify him, I think, very harshly. And I'm sure he'll have a great time playing in, you know, probably one of the best stadiums in rugby in Europe, you know, playing indoors at the La Défense Arena. Again, I think what's not there to like, playing for Racing, I think it would be an amazing couple of years. And whether he comes back or not, again, who knows?
Of course. We'll get off of the toxicity that is money in one set. I've got one more question sort of around this. Obviously, again, this ties in something else I want to speak about. Back end last season, you suffered a big injury, your ACL and your meniscus. With everything that was going on with Irish as well at the same time, did you ever, probably quite a hard question, did you ever think that might be it with your rugby career, that you probably wouldn't get picked back up because no one's going to take a gamble on an injured player?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did my knee 2 weeks before Irish folded in what was the, I spoke about, that last week we played against Exeter, the last game of the season. I did it on the Thursday training session of the last week of the season. So that was pretty unfortunate. Absolutely. I think, you know, it was a big, these clubs were taking a massive chance on someone with basically, I would have been like, I'm out for this entire season. So, and that's kind of what I was expecting. It was a big gamble. And, you know, I was talking to one or two other clubs who did pull out when they found out the extent of my injury and things like that. So, but thankfully, Gloss has stepped in, and I had a good relationship with James Lightfoot Brown, who was at London Irish and is now a tech coach at Gloucester. Yeah. I think he definitely played quite a big hand in that as well, as well as bringing in numerous other London Irish boys as well down to Gloucester. Absolutely. It did cross my mind, of course. And I was pretty nervous to the fact that my timing probably couldn't have been any worse, to be honest.
And how has the recovery process gone since? Obviously, you would have started the first 2 months clubless because you signed for Gloucester in, what was it, August? So you've had
I started in Gloucester at the start of August. Irish folded mid-May, late May, something like that. I can't really remember. So yeah, for 2 months, I was without a club. For a month of that, or maybe 6 weeks of that, the RPA did fund physio and like S&C stuff at Irish. Or not just injured boys, but boys who were without a club at that point, just, you know, keep up with their gym, keep up with their running, keep things open, which was good. And that was really helpful for me. Obviously, as good as that was, it wasn't the same as being in a full-time environment because, it might have been 2 or 3 times a week rather than 4 or 5 times a week, for instance. So, and that probably did stall my recovery initially. And then I was unfunded by the RPA, another physio in Reading for a few weeks, which again was like really helpful from the RPA, but again not ideal compared to being in a full-time environment. But yeah, I was very glad to be able to come into Gloucester at the start of August and kind of pick things back up again, and then yeah, recovery in general, slow, very slow going. As I did my ACL meniscus, but yeah, my cartilage was the main issue, and it is still the main issue. And that is like because there's very limited blood flow to your cartilage, it doesn't heal particularly well. So it's yeah, a lot of pretty dull stuff, pretty repetitive things, and it has been for I'm now coming up to 9 months in, and it's still very dull and repetitive. But yeah, hopefully we'll get there eventually. You know, hopefully I'll be fit for next season, and that's kind of where my sights are set at the moment.
Yeah, so short term aims, you will be back playing full time rugby next season. Anything on the horizon for this season, or is it all just rehab and physio?
I think I was originally hoping to be back maybe March, April time. But I had another operation at the start of December, sorry, which kind of wrote that off, I think. I think if I'm back for next season, I'll be relatively happy with that because I'd already mentally written off the season anyway. You know, if I was back training March, April time, I probably wouldn't have played anyway. And because there wouldn't be much point, I think, by that point. So yeah, hopefully next season. And I think I'll be relatively happy if that's the case.
And obviously you've moved to a club which you will be competing with. They've seemed to have a ridiculous number of fly halves sort of within their ranks. They've just obviously brought Charlie Atkinson in as well from Leicester mid-season. They've got Hastings. Is that something that you're looking forward to competing with the best and learning from them? Or is it something that you, in the back of your mind, means it's going to make my job 10 times tougher?
I think a bit of both. But I think at the end of the day, you know, all the Premiership clubs have top quality fly halves, and you just have to be better than your competition in that regard. And as you said, there's plenty of guys there who I can learn off as well. So that is a positive. And yeah, as I said, yeah, like there's going to be competition at every club. And at the end of the day, kind of the cream does rise to the top kind of thing at the end. And if you're playing well and you're confident and, you know, you're doing what the coach wants you to do, you will get an opportunity at some point. But yeah, there is plenty of competition, and I guess that's just something I have to crack on with, hopefully, when I am back fit. And yeah, that's pretty much it, to be honest.
Have you managed to integrate pretty well with the squad, even though you obviously haven't ever been playing while you've been at Gloucester? You arrive and you're injured, and you've been in the physio room ever since, but you still feel a good part of the squad and boys sort of getting around you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good people at Gloucester, both staff and players and things like that. A lot of really nice people. Obviously, it is a bit more difficult. You know, I think people who have played rugby and team sports and things like that know that, you know, the way you get to know people is through playing and, you know, kind of sharing that bond with them. So it definitely is a bit more difficult. My contact time with a lot of the other squads is less than it would be just because, as you said, I'm in the physio room. It does mean that you get to know that other lads who are injured quite well. as you know, you're sitting on physio beds for half the day, four or five times a week. It gets to know people pretty well. But yeah, I'd say it's definitely a little bit more difficult, and it has been a bit of a challenge. But again, there's a lot of good people, you know, a lot of lovely guys and down at Gloucester. So no, they make me feel welcome 100%.
Who's keeping you entertained in the physio room then? Anyone in particular?
Varapava Roskin is an interesting character. So he's definitely entertaining. But you know, Adam Hastings has spent a lot of time injured. He's a lovely guy to talk to. And there's numerous other academy boys as well who have, you know, picked up some pretty long-term injuries as well. So although you never like to have someone of a long-term injury, it does mean I get a bit more company in a physio room. So, and there's plenty of good guys, and the physio team is a lot of fun as well, which is nice as well, because the last thing you want is someone really dull and having to spend something 2 or 3 hours. it's good. I'm really enjoying it down at Gloucester. They're looking after me really well, and I can't complain, to be honest.
And of course, I mean, I can't say what your highlight of your career is, but one of the big things Gloucester would have seen of you, which would have helped make the decision, is your performance at England 20s last year. Talk to us a little bit about that. Obviously, Bolton and Forbes, this was sort of your first proper breakthrough time spending time with England.
The 20s was very, very enjoyable. You know, it's always great representing your country and things like that. Originally, I was almost in some regards lucky to even play at all. So I wasn't actually picked in the original squad, which I wasn't very happy about. But got a bit of luck. I think there was an injury or two at fly half. just before the start of the Six Nations and played a couple of warm-up games, went well, then, yeah, got the start against Scotland. As I said, it was great fun. You're with, you know, a bunch of 30 lads who are all the same age, all there for have a good time, but also, like I said, representing their country probably on that stage for the first time. Like lads have played under 18s and things like that, but it's not the same in terms of the coverage of it and how you're actually in a Six Nations environment and you're in camp week on week. So, you know, you get to know people really well. Unfortunately, the tournament ended with me getting a red card against Ireland. And that is the last time that is my last act so far on a rugby pitch. So, probably wasn't the best way to go out.
That tackle divided a lot of opinion at the time.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you were hard done by, or do you think it probably was?
It's easy for me to feel hard done by because I think it's quite clearly was an accident. But when you look at it, you can't really blame them for sending me off. It's just not good. It's one of those that just doesn't look good. It was clear, and thankfully, you know, the Irish fullback was absolutely fine. I spoke to him after the game, and he was told by his physio to stay down and milk it as much as possible, which, again, can't really blame them for as well. But yeah, it was pretty unfortunate. It was my first card at all in my career, so that was interesting. I couldn't really come at a worse moment because I felt like we were really in the game with the win behind us in the second half, started to gain a bit of momentum. And I thought we could, and eventually we got a red card. We went out to 14. They pull away with it a little bit, and then Ireland win the Grand Slam. So that was great. probably let a few down there, but yeah, it was one of those things. The whole tribunal and that kind of experience from getting banned and things like that was all a bit alien to me. It was quite an interesting experience as well. I don't know whether you spoke about it with anyone on this podcast before, but it honestly feels like you've ended up in court and you've committed a crime, and you have people from all over the world.
Yeah, we spoke a little bit about it. Go into the process a little bit. So obviously you get the red card, you obviously appeal it, but then take us through what happens next.
Yeah, so got the red card. The next day, I know the team manager and the team manager Irish are organising me getting on this tribunal on a call. It's all over Zoom. Thankfully, I didn't have to, you know, wear a suit and go into Twickenham, which it wasn't potentially before COVID. Because I think actually mine was done by the Six Nations rather than the RFU. I think that's how it worked as well. So mine was, I think it's like a 4-person panel, like internationally. And they're like slowing down, replaying, doing the whole lot, whilst like the Wi-Fi doesn't really work that well, so it's like really blocky and things like that. I don't know. It was just a bit carnage. And I'm in there with my academy manager, like trying to argue my case, and you know, it was like, this happened and this happened, and
bar being obviously unintentional, what were your justifying reasons?
Well, I think that was kind of the main one. And then my next one was gone. I've hit him low and I've rapped. And then he's kind of gone over my shoulder. And then their issue was I then kind of stand up in the tackle. But my argument, which is true, I was just trying to catch the bloke because I've seen his legs basically go over my shoulder. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. And trying to catch him before he lands on his head. Anyway. But I think basically in terms of me trying to catch him, I've actually then made it worse. So it was a bit thing that probably let me down. You try and argue that you can argue if you get a red card, you can argue it wasn't foul play at all and you shouldn't even have a yellow.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty argument to basically go again for. So if you try to argue that it should have been a yellow card, you admit to foul play, but that it shouldn't have been a red card line you go down. And you know, unless you've punched or kicked someone in the face, you just go, I'm sorry, and I'll take the punishment. Like you try argue it.
Yeah.
Basically. So I got a 3-week ban, which was actually really annoying because it ended up being 4 weeks because there was a bye week in the middle of it, which didn't really make much sense to me, which obviously is the rules. And I get it if, you know, because it's meant to be 3 games. And I understand that because, as you said, if you get, you know, banned at the last game of the season, you basically don't get banned at all. But so it was a bit frustrating. It meant I missed out. And also friendlies were included in it as well. So I basically missed essentially 5 games that I could have played in. So I felt a bit hard done by, to be honest. But you know, it's the way it goes.
Do you think that's something that needs looking at, and that rugby adopt more of a football way that you'll get match bans rather than weekly bans?
Yes, but I think that's the way it's done. That's the gist I got, because if it's a week ban, but I know with mine, because there's a bye week, that's why I ended up being 4 weeks, because it was three like games. I just felt, mainly I felt hard done by, because I accepted that, whatever. But they're like two friendlies, a weird like kind of A-League-esque, like second team friendlies with Irish, again, went against like Leinster and Bath or something. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't allowed to play in those. And, you know, as like a young player, I felt a bit hard done by for that, because it would have been quite a key part of like an experience for me, and it would have been good for my development. I think that's what Irish were trying to say to them as well, but again, it didn't work. But
completely,
yeah, there's been one where another player at Irish, who was like around the same age as me, he got a red card playing in the national leagues, and then the friendlies didn't count in his ban, so he was allowed to play in them. And that's when it all got a bit weird for me, how it was kind of one rule for me, and then one rule for him. But I don't know, it's the way it goes, and it's a shame that was my last act on the rugby pitch, but it was one of those things. I think it was hopefully quite clearly an accident, and I guess you have to just take that into account and just crack on with it, really.
Of course. Before, I just want to go back to something you said, it was probably about 5 minutes ago now, but you mentioned that the physio told that Irish fullback to stay down and keep milking it.
Yeah.
Is that something that you think happens a lot more in rugby now, as in not because of the football, but you see in football, there's so much about people diving and stuff like that. It's something you don't necessarily consider being as big an issue in rugby, but is it? It's not something I've heard too much of.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I think it happens the whole time. If a lad's been... The only thing I'd say with it is now, you know, you might see, well, someone gets hit in the face, are they going to stay down and milk it and things like that? The issue then is, if you do that, you then have to go off for an HIA.
Yeah.
So there's quite a fine line. I do think, though, a big one is something like that, where, or someone goes up to take a high ball and gets spun in the air, maybe lands on their shoulder or their back or something. Definitely, I think they're told to stay down 100%, just to, you know, try and get more out of it as well. But, and I think you can argue against it and go, oh, you know, you shouldn't be trying to milk that. But at the end of the day, it's sportsmanship. If the person's, it's going to be a penalty anyway. Personally, it's probably not a great thing for me to say, but if you can stay down and milk a yellow card out of it, or milk a red card out of it, you're
gaining the advantage for team.
And at the end of the day, the ref or TMO at a high level need to kind of see through that, and they'll do their job by the letter of the law anyway. So, I think teams 100% do it. I think, like, it does, if someone is injured, I don't really know what the exact laws are in terms of, like, if there's an injury in a tackle or something like that. I don't really know. But 100% teams do. 100%. I think every single team, if something like that has happened, which is pretty rare, 100%, I think everyone does it.
Interesting. Obviously, you made your sort of professional, like, your first break in professional game came in the Prem Cup. Just a quick one on that. A lot of people look at it as worthless and not enjoyable to watch, stuff like that. Do you think it's still a very valuable part of the English setup in rugby? I think it is, because it obviously provides launch pads for the young players, as I players to put their hands up, and it's the sort of first sighting that the public will get of a new 19-year-old or new 17-year-old prop, whatever, like stuff like that. And so many people have, who are now in the English setup, have made their springboard through the Prem Cup. What's your take on that competition?
No, exactly same as yours. I think it has to be, particularly now there's no A-League as well, because otherwise, you know, young players aren't going to get any shot of, you know, feeling like playing a professional setup or playing a professional game. And as you said, it has to be that stepping stone into the Premiership. And then, as you said, kind of into the England setup. So I think it's massively valuable. I know obviously they changed it around this year. It's now majority at the start of the season, which I think is good and bad. Because it does mean if someone's injured at the start of the season, they then basically miss the entire Prem Cup, which is a shame. But it does mean, if as a fit, say you have four or five really good games in the Prem Cup, you can almost force your way into a Premiership side, the way you otherwise might not have had that opportunity to. So I think it's absolutely massive. It's a massive kind of place for young players to really put their hand up. I think the only difficulty with it sometimes is that some teams might put out a much stronger team than the other side, and different clubs take it differently seriously. I know London Irish, like, sometimes I felt that we were putting out sides that were a bit too good and we were absolutely battering teams. But it happens the whole time where it is quite a hard balance because DORs will want lads coming back from injury to play in it as well to get fit match fitness, but they could be a 30-cap international and could be opposite or 18-year-old is playing his first professional game. You know what I mean? It can be quite hard to balance, but I think with the championship teams coming into it, it definitely both gives exposure to the championship teams, but also allows teams to play, premiership teams play younger players, like use that as another almost stepping, like as a stepping stone. I think it's really good for the game, to be honest. As I said, particularly now there is no A-League, which is really unfortunate because it means a lot of lads are going out on loan, which again isn't a bad thing for the championship and the national leagues, but it does mean you don't get that same professional quality exposure than you might have done. And it can be like, I've played at both Henley and Rosslyn Park and absolutely love both of those. And they're great for my development. But it does mean, I know boys that have difficulties where they might like, you might only be at a loan club for a 2 or 3 week block. And then it's really hard for that loan club to then pick you because they've got lads there, they don't want to drop and et cetera. And it can be quite difficult for some guys to get quality and consistent game time, 18, 19, 20. Which is a real shame, but yeah, I'd love to see the A-League come back in, but it won't happen with the squad size.
The Prem Cup has moved to start of the season because of the World Cup as well. But is that now a permanent fixture? It's going to stay there. It's now going to always going to be. Or was that? I thought it was just for the season.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you think it's better off that it would stay where it is now?
I think there's pros and cons to both. As I said, if like it does happen with some boys, they're just in like, and they might get a niggle at back in the preseason.
Yeah,
you miss all your opportunity for the year. Whereas before, I think there's like one or two at the start, one or two more November time, one or two January, February time, and it kind of worked that way. You got to stay around a bit. But as I said, then it does give some younger lads consistent game time to really put their hand up then for the start of the Premiership season, kind of set them on that season. So there's pros and cons to both. I don't know whether it's staying or not. You might be absolutely correct that, and I know it was due to the World Cup why it changed.
Yeah.
So it may well revert back again next year, but I'm not entirely sure, to be honest.
No worries. Before we finish, just a little bit, obviously it's that time of year, Six Nations. This is actually coming out just the same day as the second round of games. But is there anyone, all the squads right now, anyone who's particularly caught your eye or one that you think people should look out for who could really burst onto the scene?
Trying to think between the squad. I've seen saw yesterday Ollie Lawrence is out, which is a shame because I think he's been great.
Out on start as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a starter. I think Slade coming back, having missed out the World Cup, will be class. He's been again unreal for the extra all year. I'm trying to think some of the younger players. Chandler Cunningham South, I'm hoping might get a game. Obviously I know him well from London Irish. Hopefully he can sneak into a test squad and that'd be really good for him. I think he's a top young player, very physical, very attritional. Again, played with him with the 20s as well, and he was just carving that up as well. So hopefully he gets a game. Who else? I'm trying to think who's in that England squad.
All looking elsewhere, has anyone who's taken note in Wales? Obviously, Wales has gone, they've pretty much ripped up the form book and gone. Here's a bunch of youngsters, and that's a 4-year cycle at the start.
Yeah, I think obviously them handing Daff Jenkins the captaincy's very interesting. He's my age, which is incredible, and fair play to him. He's already got probably 15, 20 caps for Wales. He's captaining his country at 21, which is pretty unheard of, wasn't it? I think it might be, it'd be great for Wales to prove me wrong, but it could be a pretty tough couple of years for them with that squad that they've gone for. But I don't think you can necessarily blame them. I do think they needed a bit of a reset anyway. Yeah. That's what we'll go for. And look, in 4 years' time, half those players might have 30 or 40 caps and they could be a real contender for all we know. So, I think it's interesting how some nations do go for a 4-year reset and you can't blame them necessarily for doing so. And it's kind of that balance is, and I think that's what England's squad's done quite well, actually, is there is a nice balance of those younger, kind of slightly more unproven guys. And then, a bit of that experience as well to not just sacrifice games for the next couple of Six Nations. Still be a bit of a contender, but also give guys plenty of caps, potentially for 4 years' time. So I think there's a nice mix there. I think it should be really exciting, Six Nations. I think there will be some new names kind of on the European stage that people haven't really heard of who will really put their hands up as kind of top international players.
And for England, who do you think in your obviously in your area of the field, do you think they'll when Farrell was obviously suspended at the World Cup, Ford took the reins, but do you think they'll stick with that, or do you think they'll finally not finally, but give Smith his chance to really stamp his name on that place for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think they'll go with Ford. Although I would say Ford has
I
been
agree.
injured, probably hasn't played his best rugby with Sale, but I think he's excellent at the World Cup. He knows Borthwick very well from their time at Leicester, and he's a top quality operator. And I think they'll go with that. It'd be interesting to see whether Finn Smith gets a game. Again, he's been class for Northampton. Like we just saw his game, that game against Munster in the wet, where they turned them over at Thurman Park with 14. So yeah, look, I think it'll be really interesting. I'm sure Smith will get, if he's not starting, he'll be on the bench, and I'm sure he'll be classed off the bench for, 20 or 30 minutes, whatever time he gets. I do think he'll go with Ford just for that kind of manager role, bit of experience. And I think if he's got a young backline outside him, I think that'd be critical as well.
I love Finn. We've had him on the podcast before, but I think he's gonna have to, I think it's probably more of an experience-based role that he'll be taking than I can't, unless there's a card or an injury, I can't see him breaking into the match day 23.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely. But again, if I'm sure he, I'm sure this won't happen now he's in the England squad, but obviously if they don't, still got that Scottish link as well, so that'd be a real steal for Scotland if he does it.
Who is
Although
it?
as I
Alec Hepburn's just obviously been called up to Scotland, having represented England however many years ago. So it's clear people do it.
it does happen. I do think find that a bit mental. And I feel like it's like yeah, it's but again, like, if I was a player and I was in that situation, why wouldn't you want to go and play international rugby again? If you
Exactly.
are, you're dual registered and your grandmother's from wherever or one parent's from Scotland, one's from England, like, why not go and have that experience? And it's, I think it's impossible to like vilify a player for going and doing that because why would you turn down international selection for any country? And so,
Completely.
yeah, I can't blame them at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, quickly before we end, six to first, how do you see it panning out?
Sorry, say that again.
Six to first, how do you see it panning out?
Oof. I think France will come first. I think they're just too good. They've got so many good players. Ireland second, England third. Hopefully, we beat Scotland fourth. I don't know how high my hopes are. And then Italy to beat Wales as well.
Yeah,
Wales last.
interesting. I think I'd probably be in the same parts. Well, Mons, thanks so much for giving up some time and coming to chat to us. I'm glad that the rehab's not too mind-numbling dull, and fingers crossed we see you back on the pitch soon. But thanks for coming on, mate.
Cheers, mate. Really appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
Sports Social Podcast Network.